Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague, Stuart Mandel. All right, Stu, we are now pleased to be joined by our guest, our buddy Max Olson, who has been all over conference realignment. Before we get to that, I do want to throw something at you guys. It's just a, as we're taping this, it's Monday morning. The brackets are out, supposedly, for the middle of March Madness. It dawned on me as I woke up this morning. So on Sunday, my little football team had a game. We had a bunch of stuff going on. I feel like I was the only person in America who didn't partake in one of these two things. I did not pay one bit of lick to the Oscars last night, and I actually haven't looked at a bracket yet, which is crazy to me considering that's I would never have thought I would have been that person 10, 15 years ago. How crazy does that sound to you guys?
Yeah, I was eager to ask you guys what you thought of Everything Everywhere All at Once when you saw it in the last year.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up, Max. I actually saw it a few weeks ago.
I'm glad I did, right?
Because I ended up winning every single award. Bruce, I watched the selection show and filled it out in real time, as I always do. Oscars, we didn't watch live. We DVR'd it. But it was weird as heck, man. I could not follow what the heck was going on during that movie. Now, with a little bit of distance, I'm like, it was very creative. You know, it's unlike anything you'll see. So I get why it would be, you know, very, get a lot of awards, right? But I'm curious what you think. I can't imagine. I don't buy. If you told me you watched that movie and understood it in real time, I don't believe it.
I know my guy Bruce is a big fan of multiverse storytelling on the big stage. What do you think, Bruce?
I am not exaggerating. I have honestly no idea what you guys are talking about.
We're talking about the movie that won Best Picture and pretty much every other award. Now, there have been years where what was that weird movie with the about water?
Shape of Water.
Yeah. Didn't know what it was. Hadn't ever seen it. There's definitely years like that, but I did see this one. I saw two Best Picture nominees, that one and Top Gun.
I mean, and Top Gun, I mean, as far as movie theater experiences go, A+.
Yeah.
I saw six of them this year. I think my favorite was Tar of all of them. But I used to be. When I was younger, in my 20s, we could just go to the Alamo Drafthouse all the time in Austin. Ever since the combination of COVID and having a kid, I just cannot get out to the theaters at all.
Yeah. Once you have a kid... we used to go to movies all the time. Once you have a kid, that's like a twice a year thing.
Speaking of movies, and so on Friday, my son had one of his buddies had a birthday party at a virtual reality place inside a mall. It was pouring rain here, so I'm expecting this place to be packed. It's the first time I've probably been in a mall, in a bigger mall, probably in the last couple of years, and it was like a ghost town. It was like almost like. It was just kind of like a little sad, a little eerie. He loved his virtual reality, battleground or whatever place there was with his buddies. But it was just kind of a little bit surreal to be in there. And I was like, oof, I hadn't been in the, I don't know.
I think if you guys are looking for off-season content, like a watch-along episode where Bruce watches Everything Everywhere All at Once and is just giving his live commentary on what the hell he's watching, I think that'd
be like a lot of WTS. But Bruce, it's fine that you didn't watch the selection show. But, people are busy. But are you saying you don't care about the brackets and the tournament this year?
This might be the first year I'm probably not. Like, I was the guy who used to not only play in points pools, but I used to do very well in them. I've watched a decent amount of college basketball this year, probably more than I did in the last 2 years. But the further I get with and I'm not saying I'm the only parent in the world, but the further I feel like I get, into our kids' activities and stuff, the less time I don't play fantasy sports because I don't feel like I have the time to devote it to doing well at it. With the bracket, I feel like it's a little bit of a crapshoot, but I don't know. I'm 50-50 on whether I wade into that this year.
I've totally fallen off on college basketball. And that's just a reflection of me. It's not a reflection of the sport or how watchable it is. Like, I'm the one who just fills out the Thursday morning bracket at the last minute and I just can't watch enough hours of college basketball during the regular season. I just don't find the time for it.
I don't think you have to, though. I don't. Most people participating in these bracket pools haven't watched college basketball that closely, yep. right? I just basically watch the conference tournaments, and I got my only thing is that I don't, you know, having not, it's interesting. We haven't watched it all season. You don't like, how is Purdue one of the four best teams in the country?
Well, they have a 7'4", 300-pound guy.
I know, but he's like
no use to the NBA right now, but he's a correct. Big problem in college basketball.
I don't think they're going to go very far. They're like, they don't really have athletes, and he, I don't know that he's considered much of an athlete. I watched Duke, and I guess they had a rough start to the season, and it kind of affected their resume. You're telling me that Purdue's a one seed and they're a five seed? I'm not a bracketologist anymore. I'm just watching for fun. But, well, my March Madness thing is my alma mater had made the tournament for just the second time. I did fly to Salt Lake the first time. It was a big deal. This time I'm like, you know, it's old hat now, right? But they got placed in Sacramento, of all sites. It's a two-hour drive. Two-hour drive.
You could swing it.
Tickets are super cheap. So, yes, I'm going up there Thursday.
Okay.
Right. So,
like, what would it take for you? Are you going to be the guy who flies up there and you're going to paint your chest W or whatever, be with, I don't know how many letters Northwestern is. What is that, 11?
I don't know 11 people who are going to be able to do that. But, yeah, that was the hard part, is that a lot of my college friends were prepared to, they wanted to go if it was, you know, anywhere close to Chicago. And then, no, they are not coming to Sacramento. But worked out well for me. I can't go to the Saturday. If they win, though, I can't go back Saturday because I got a softball game to coach.
Okay. So nobody listens to us to hear about Northwestern basketball.
Or the Oscars.
But, all right, Max, we're bringing you on, not because we just want to see your handsome face, but because there's a lot of realignment chatter going on. We're in mid-March. This is around the time frame some of us were expecting this to be. We should get some answers here on a lot of speculation. What does our audience need to know about what's going on with the Pac-12/Big 12/Gonzaga?
Well, and we should note Max was at the Big 12 tournament, not for the basketball, but for this.
Oh my! I can't emphasize enough how little basketball I watched at the Big 12 basketball tournament.
So how much chatter did you pick up that our audience needs to parse?
Yeah, I think a lot of conversations in Kansas City. I think. Like, as we reported, I think about 10 days ago or so, I mean, the position of the Big 12 is very clear here. Brett Yormark keeps saying the same thing publicly that Mac Rhodes said, which is the Big 12's ready if there's an opportunity with adding Pac-12 schools. Brett Yormark made it clear last week that adding those Pac-12 schools is more of a priority right now than potentially adding Gonzaga or anybody else. I think they're very focused on that possibility. And, you know, that's, you know, that publicly, that's about all they can say. I think that they're like everybody else, they're sitting back and really, really wondering, you know, what is going on with the Pac-12 deal? Where will that end up, in terms of the money and the partners and the distribution and all that stuff? I really honestly did not hear a lot of spin from Big 12 people about, oh, we hear it's this number, we hear it's some horrible deal or anything like that. They don't know. They don't know how this is going to shake out. We think probably there will be a little bit more clarity on this within the next 2 weeks. I think that certainly it's pretty clear to me from the conversations that at this point the targets are Arizona and Colorado, and that I get the sense that those are the schools. At what level, I don't know, but that those are the schools that maybe are a little bit more nervous about staying in the Pac-12. And I think Big 12 is going to keep trying to court them and persuade them that the future is brighter in their conference. And if you can pull that off, then, you know, maybe you have a chance at getting all four of those schools that they've coveted really since Brett Yormark took over in July.
So you're saying, Max, that and you know, we reported that a week ago, you reported it, that they've narrowed it from four to those two, or they think like those two are the most vulnerable, and if we can get them to come over, then the others don't have a choice?
I think that those are the two that have been pretty receptive up to this point in having these conversations. And you know, the obviously with this stuff, like the schools are going to start those conversations. And so you know, I think there's a belief that, yeah, if those two are actually interested in doing this, then there's a chance to, I think that would probably set off a little bit of a panic for the rest, and that there would, you know, be that possibility of getting all four. I think Oregon and Washington's probably a different conversation entirely. But yeah, I think that's, I don't think the focus is on getting just two, but just from everything we've heard in our reporting for the past few weeks, it seems like that's where the opportunity lies right now. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, because I think there's just still a lot that has to shake out here on the Pac-12 side. And obviously, it's you know, I think it's a difficult decision.
Here's what's interesting to me, Bruce, if I can go real quick. So here's what's interesting about if we say, let's say that those are the two that they're focused on. Realignment, for all the times we follow realignment, is usually almost entirely about football, right? Football drives the bus. Colorado has been one of the worst football programs in the country, or Power Five programs in the country, for two decades, or not two, maybe 15 years, right? But they have Dion now. Everybody's excited about that. Arizona, when I did the kind of crunching the TV numbers last summer, is by far the least watched football program in the Pac-12. So why do you think it is that they think getting these two schools would add value to the Big 12?
I think the Arizona piece starts with the basketball value, to be totally honest. I think that is how they are looking at their position relative to the rest of the Power Five leagues, that their best advantage. I mean, they love what they're going to have in the Big 12, you know, starting in 25, in terms of just the depth of the 12, when you add the four new members this summer and then Texas and Oklahoma leave. But I think that they see an opportunity in terms of trying to make up this revenue gap and trying to catch up in some way to the SEC and the Big Ten. They have an advantage in basketball. They have the best basketball league in men's basketball, and I think they see an opportunity. And I don't think Brett Yormark has been very shy about, like, dropping hints that's kind of how he sees the long-term play here, is trying to get a lot more value for what they have in basketball by, you know, potentially unbundling that at the end of the decade and trying to sell it separately. And so I think Arizona basketball, you know, that's just a, you know, straight up elite top 10 program. I mean, and that's pretty clear in terms of why that'd be a priority for them. And then, yeah, Colorado, I mean, it's oversimplifying to say it's the Dion factor, but, like, you know, you're right. I mean, the on-field success is not there. There's some history of that in the Big 12. There was a period under Gary Barnett where, in a 5-year period, they won four Big 12 North titles. So it's worked before in the Big 12. You know, quite frankly, since they left the Big 12, I remember there was a few years there right away where I just, like, kind of, you weren't really hearing about them. They're kind of out in the wilderness a little bit in terms of the league they joined, and they did it out of, you know, stability when the Big 12 was in a shaky spot. But I don't really think there's any hard feelings there with Colorado if they were to want to come back into the conference.
The interesting thing to me there is the timing piece of this. So, and I agree with you. You said Arizona's always been a college basketball first school in a conference that's really, except for UCLA, I don't feel like really tilts that way. But a year ago, Arizona was coming off a first year under Jed Fish. They had a lot of rebuilding to do. Well, they had a really good 2022, and they've recruited well, and that program is definitely on the upswing. A year ago, you know, I think anybody looked at it was like Carl Durrell's program had flatlined. And as Stu said, Colorado football has been really down for pushing two decades now. And so Dion is about the only thing that has brought any life to that. Yeah, there was a year where Mike McIntyre had them playing very well. But for the most part, this program has been completely irrelevant. And I think even from a standpoint to what you just said, Max, you know, pretty much every school in this league, with the possible exception of Utah, has a natural rivalry, whether it was obviously Cal, Stanford, UCLA, USC, the Arizona schools, the Oregon schools. Washington had, you know, both Wazoo and Oregon, whereas Colorado didn't really have anybody. Right now, you know, Nebraska is going to go, they're staying in the Big Ten, but it's like, there's probably some connections there with Iowa State, and certainly maybe to some of the other schools they played a bunch of times in the past. At least there's that. I get it. But to spin forward, if I am the Pac-12 or whatever is left of the Pac-12, I'm looking at it going, you know what? The two biggest brands, especially as it relates to football, it's not even close. It's still Washington and Oregon. And those programs are strong right now. If I am George, I'm doing everything I can to cater to those athletic departments and say, look, geographically, it's not an easy fit for you guys to go play, you know, what feels like Conference USA. I'm not saying feels like the same quality product, but in terms of geographically, when you're throwing some of the schools that are in there now, that are going to be in there, those are long trips to take, right? So here, how do we make this work? We're going to make Oregon and Washington what was USC. We're going to showcase that. If you, and I'll say this to both you guys, if you were George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, how would you frame this going forward as the most attractive way to not just save face, but to build off a strength where it's like, okay, we may lose those two other schools and we may lose some other brands that maybe were on our radar, but maybe they're not relevant to us. You know, maybe we take San Diego State because that gives us a Southern California. And they've been, and honestly, San Diego State's been really good at college basketball at times, and they've been very competitive in college football. So if you're George, what do you do going forward if you think you may lose Colorado and Arizona, but you still have Utah, who's really good in football, and those other two schools to cater to?
I think that if Colorado, and by the way, I'm very skeptical that any of these schools are going to leave, just to put that out there, but you never know in realignment. If Colorado and Arizona were the two that left, I'm not going to say the Pac-12 wouldn't care, but put it this way, I was told by somebody who does this for a living, evaluating programs, that because those two programs are like in the low end of the viewership, like if they left, the per school average would actually go up for the remaining schools. Now, it would then go back down if they added San Diego State or whatnot. But like, I don't think those two leaving is the end of the conference, right? Oregon and Washington leaving to the Big Ten, if that were to happen, would be the end of the conference. Now, I think that because the Big Ten doesn't have a commissioner right now and seems kind of rudderless, there's not really a possibility that they're going to add those schools in the next 2 to 3 months. You know, so I think they feel pretty good that they will sign the TV deal. But then it just becomes, and you know, with the Big 12, right? Like, oh, you know, those schools almost left for Larry Scott's conference, and then they stayed, but you always knew like it was still a possibility they were going to leave, and they did. Like, I don't think keeping the conference together now, right, is a short-term win, but it doesn't really solve the question of if we are heading to this two super conference model, like what's going to change? Let's say they sign a 5-year TV contract. What's going to change in the next 5 years that would make it the decision any different if they ever do get that invite, right? So I don't have an easy answer to your question, Bruce. I don't know what really is going to, I mean, you know, we saw the conference get better on the football field last year after a really rough run. You know, if those programs rise up and have success, that could help their image. But the money difference is never going to change.
And there's just not expansion options out there, right? I mean, I'm not knocking those schools. Obviously, it'd be super meaningful to those schools, whether it's San Diego State, SMU, Mountain West members, whatever. Like, obviously, that'd be meaningful to them to get into the Pac-12, but that doesn't change the game at all.
Can I ask you something, Stu? You said two things there. One, I would like to weigh in on quick. To me, Colorado hiring Dion, I think that will do, and I could be totally wrong on this, but I think that will do wonders for their TV numbers. I think Colorado, for the first time in 20 plus years, no offense, Joel, but has made them really a very interesting program in a way that I don't even think they were that interesting. Like, you know, they had some good teams under Gary Barnett. Dion makes them nationally relevant in a way they have not been in a long, or nationally curious. And I think you will see that reflected in TV numbers. Now, look, if they go on and they don't have offensive and defensive linemen and they go on being 3-9, that'll fizzle pretty quick. But with the portal and with a lot of things, I think that is going to change the ratings piece of this. But the second point is what you had said about, well, we think this is going to go to two super conferences. Like, if that is, like, do you really believe that? Because if that's the case, then everything we're talking about with the Big 12 is a moot point too. So untangle that for our audience. I mean, are you just throwing out there because that's been like kind of a broader talking point, or do you really think, you know, 20 years from now, because I feel like 20 years from now is a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm not trying to project what will happen in 20. I mean, I think what will happen is further consolidation, but I don't know that it'll necessarily be like, I think eventually the traditional conference model will blow up. It just doesn't make sense.
Does that happen like, after 2036? Because that's when, you know,
that's when the next, yeah, like, see, yeah. Like at some point, don't we get to a point where this is so distorted? Like if it were me, and I had the magic wand, I would say, I think they need to separate college football out into its own product. And if, you know, cause like, for instance, John Skipper, the former ESPN president, was on a podcast a couple weeks ago. And it was interesting because he, you know, the ACC TV deal that the ACC schools can't stand now, like he was on the other end of it. He negotiated that for ESPN. And he said, look, if the ACC wants to make more revenue and the Pac-12 is out here trying to like survive, those two conferences should merge. And then the ACC, that would allow the ACC to blow up their contract and renegotiate it. And the ACC would suddenly have all these new, you know, households out west for the ACC network.
How are they going to travel though for these sports?
Well, that's the thing. Like,
he also talked about, if I'm not mistaken, a pay-per-view Super Bowl, which like, I don't know.
That's what I'm getting at. So it makes zero sense for like Oregon's cross country team to have to go to Tallahassee. Right. But if Oregon,
that would be pretty cross country of them. Yes.
Yes, it would. Good point. Oregon football playing, you know, two games a year on the other side of the country is not that big a strain. So if, you know, I think there should be like
other sports too, though.
Well, this is where I think the model needs to blow up. Like, let's just use one that actually has already happened, USC and UCLA. It makes, even that is like, I can't believe they're doing that. I mean, I get why they're doing it. It's much more money. You know, USC in particular feels like to win a national championship in football, we need to be making the same kind of money Alabama, Ohio State are making. But what they're doing to their other sports is just is bizarre. So,
but it's helping the TV brand and it's helping, look, Fox.
But why can't we separate them? Why can't we have, you know, play wherever you want in football, right? Go play whoever you want. But USC water polo should still be playing Cal and Stanford and the Arizona schools, not Rutgers. So why can't you have a football conference and then a conference for all your other sports? The financial model doesn't change. Your athletic department would still take the money they're making from the football product and use it to fund all their other sports. I'm talking mostly about basically for travel and student, you know, making it easier on the student athletes. Because then I think all this is a way of saying, Bruce, how do you stave off the two super conference model? By making it three. By letting two, you know, it's not going to be as good as those other conferences, but better. Each of those conferences, as it is now, are just going to be afterthoughts in the national landscape. But if we can put more of those marquee programs together in football, they're going to make more money. They're going to play more nationally relevant games. Remember, we've got a 12-team playoff coming up. So some of those teams are going to be in the playoff every year. But you can't keep making the non-revenue athletes go further and further away for their games.
Before Max, you answer, I do want to throw something out there. Like, interacting with some other, especially this fall in Big Noon, we'd like kind of meet some other sports teams at Big Ten schools, and they're not competing necessarily against traditional Big Ten programs. And so just as a, you know, little like snapshot of this, this is who Arizona State competed against in the Pac-12 wrestling championships. Oregon State, obviously that's Pac-12 school, Stanford, Pac-12 school, Cal Poly, not a Pac-12 school. Then Arizona State came in fourth. Number five, Little Rock. And number six, Cal State Bakersfield.
Why aren't they adding Little Rock in football?
I don't know. But like, just as a snapshot, like, because some of these sports are off our radar and not necessarily, you know, like, I think sometimes we don't realize that some of these other things, other sports, and some of them, like with hockey, you see different schools are represented in those things. So I don't think that's what you're saying, Stu, is unthinkable, because it happens right. in other sports out of necessity.
Yeah, I think, like, your question is right, Bruce, of like, well, what does this matter? I guess if you believe that someday ACC schools will be in the SEC, then like, what are we doing, right? Or I get that, like, world. I think right now we're kind of just in that really like contentious time where, like, I think the other three leagues just are like looking at this and being like, how do we even be number three, right? Like, like among these three, like, how do we be the best of them? And I think that is how the folks in the Big 12 have looked at this since Brett Yarmark came in, and honestly since USC and UCLA made that move, is like, well, we have to be aggressive, we have to do things to best position ourselves to try to make as much money as possible, because that's how everything is judged now. And that's, as we're seeing in the Pac-12, like the commissioner's job is being judged by how much money he's bringing home in this TV deal. And so, you know, the ACC is in this really tough spot where they are like, it feels like they're like really sidelined in all of this stuff until 36, which probably won't actually be the case. But like, if you're those member schools, like, you're talking about revenue, changing the revenue model, because there's not really much else you can do here. So, yeah, I mean, I think the idea of, obviously there have been moments in the past couple of years where, you know, there was, you know, Bob Bowlesby went and met with George soon after he got the job to talk about whether they need to collaborate. There's been ACC Pac-12 talks in the past. Like, I think we'll continue. I don't know that a merger will end up happening someday, but like, it kind of makes sense because the three of them have to figure out how to get to higher ground here at some point.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's so, I mean, as soon as USC and UCLA left, you know, I think within a couple of weeks, I wrote a column about what a merger would look like. And then I think it was like 4 days later, the Pete Thamel reported like, it's off. They talked about it. They're going their separate ways. And to this day, they dispute who broke it off with whom. And so obviously, and Max and I have been, you know, heavily involved in this. He's very connected in the Big 12. My connections are more in the Pac-12. We found ourselves teaming up a lot on these realignment stories. And like, these two leagues have become like bitter enemies over the last 9 months, their commissioners in particular. And it's so counterproductive. Like, they have more in common with each other than they do certainly the Big Ten and the SEC. And you would think like it would make sense to, I'm not saying there's an easy thing, right? But like, if you want to become stronger, you could team up. And instead they're just waging this, like, and it's a very one-sided war, by the way. The Big 12 is trying to annex the Pac-12 while the Pac-12 is just trying to get a TV deal done. You know, it's totally counterproductive. It really is. There aren't that many marquee programs out there that are left that the two big conferences would even want, right? Like, we figure the SEC, if the ACC grant of rights wasn't a thing, we assume the SEC would be interested in Florida State and Clemson. We think the Big Ten would be interested in Oregon, Washington, mainly so that USC and UCLA aren't on an island. And then, of course, there's Notre Dame. Beyond that, there aren't schools, like, it's not going to be like the SEC is going to go to 32. Like, there aren't that many schools that would even add value to them. You know, an interesting one I should ask you, Bruce,
and also Miami. Just to add to that, because there's only like five that are ultra valuable in the rest of the landscape. That's kind of why everybody else has to be like making phone calls and has to be like figuring out what's out there, because who is protecting you? Like, the Big 12 folks went through that in 21 of like, you know, you get on your calls together and you preach unity and how we're all going to be better off if we link arms and stick together. And then you get off those meetings and everybody else is calling ADs and other leagues and trying to figure out what their options are, because if one day the Big Ten decides they want to, you know, add Oregon and Washington, like, then we're going to set off another chain reaction here.
Bruce, where would Miami end up in all this if the grant of rights went away tomorrow? Because I don't get the sense there.
It would be most viable to the Big Ten. Academically, it's a strong school. They're really good in basketball. They're obviously really, really, they've been traditionally great in baseball. At times they are, at times they aren't. I think the biggest piece here is, does Mario Cristobal get Miami going again? Right? Because the thing is, and people will look at, say, okay, their attendance numbers are usually never good. Their TV ratings, when they're really good, are as good as anybody's. They do massive numbers. They are a big TV draw when they're good. And that matters a lot more than what the, you know, what some sports writer takes a picture of, you know, an hour before the game. That, you know, like, it's, to me, I think that they would be a Big Ten school because of the academic part. Also, geographically, Miami is a big TV market, right? And that is just not something that the Big Ten has. I watched a lot of Big Ten basketball over the last 2 weeks, and the commercial they have, which is a really cute little animation of showing the footprint of the conference schools, basically from the Midwest all the way to Rutgers, Maryland, Penn State. And I think if you do that with Miami, it incorporates. And also, by the way, that's an East, you know, it's not like, that's a much more geographically easier fit than USC and UCLA are. But now all of a sudden you're taking the Miami market with the LA market, with the Chicago market, with the Philly market, with, you know, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, and Miami considers themselves an East Coast school for sure. They have a lot of East Coast alums. I think you would have to find another school somewhere near them to pair them up with, but it would make sense. Why don't we circle back to the here and now? So I, like I said, you know, Max is hearing what all the Big 12 people are saying. They seem optimistic that they're going to get at least a couple of these Pac-12 schools. Pac-12 people aren't talking for the most part. But the one, when they do talk, it's almost like they're, it's like a different reality. You know, there are all these stories out there about how they're on the brink of implosion, and nobody gives the sense that that's really true. I think they think that the TV deal will get done here soon, and it'll be about the same as the Big 12s. Like, it won't be drastically more, and it won't be drastically less. It'll probably be more on streaming than the Big 12s, but contrary to some rumors, like, they're still going to be on ESPN. Maybe Colorado is a complete wild card to me. I think Dion might run the athletic department at this point, but I think the other three, as long as the money is workable, aren't going anywhere.
And that's the weird thing with this stuff too, is like, there's no, okay. So like if those schools were coming over to the Big 12, like there's no money to negotiate. Like, I think they would be full share, you know, be 31 million, right? Like there's no, like, we're going to make you some substantial offer. The exit is a very easy thing to negotiate, obviously, as we see with USC and UCLA moving on and all that. Like, it really just comes down to, like, there's no, like, terms to negotiate here. Like, it's just, do you buy the vision or not, mm-hmm. right? Like, and that's the, from talking to Big 12 people, it's like, they're not going to twist people's arm on this. Like, they want to add, you know, schools that want to be in the Big 12, which is obviously, like, kind of been the question all along, especially with, like, some of, like, the Utahs and Arizona States and some of the ones that have maybe put out statements to the contrary in the past. Like, it's ultimately like, do you buy what Brett Yormark is selling and kind of his vision for the rest of the decade here, or do you kind of stick with the safety of what you know?
I mean, I think that people need to remember or keep in mind is the Pac-12 presidents are a very ivory tower, and you know, as much as people scoff at the notion that academics should be part of a realignment decision, I mean, it kind of is. I am not in a position to judge any Big 12 school's academics, right? I'm not here to crap on. Bruce loves to crap on some school's academics. I'm not here to do that.
Oh, I don't.
But no, I do know. And, oh, no, I'm sorry. More about student alumni's academics. But
no, I more of a sports writer academics. That's it. Don't like.
Yeah. The most telling thing to me is that in 2021, after OU and Texas bolted, every one of those Big 12 schools was calling the Pac-12, right? Like, we need a life raft. And they had a chance, and they did talk to a couple of them, like, at least got a little bit along the way. And ultimately, they punted, right? They decided they didn't want to have any of those schools. And so the notion that 2 years later, after the president decided...
Do you think that was a good decision at the time?
It's hard to say. I mean, I don't think those schools would have, like, if let's say 2 years ago they'd added Houston and TCU. I don't think that would have had a huge
I think at the time we're talking about TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State. Who's the TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State? Why am I blanking here?
I mean, I guess.
Texas
I guess,
Tech. Excuse me. Yeah, I the three Texas the schools in Oklahoma State.
I mean, I guess with the benefit of the hindsight, they should have, because they wouldn't feel so vulnerable right now. And also, like, the one thing that conference, I mean, you know, they've had this existential crisis for a while now of they're just the players on the West Coast are leaving, right? Like, the top players on the West Coast aren't necessarily staying home anymore. So I do think it would have benefited them to get into Texas. and maybe they still will. They're talking to SMU, but it was probably time for them to think a little more seriously about that. But anyway, like, my point is, if you're Utah, well, if Utah's a whole other thing, because I really think they don't want to be in a conference with BYU. Like, I think the animosity there is too great. But Arizona State, Michael Crow's been the president there forever. He is definitely Mr. Ivory Tower. Does he really want his school to be in a conference with all of the schools that 2 years ago they didn't think were quote unquote good enough to be in the Pac-12? So I'm glad we're finally going to get, I think, some resolution here in the next couple weeks. Pac-12 presidents are meeting again next week, where I believe they will be presented with whatever George has reached, and they will have to decide if they approve it.
Max, before we let you go, I want to bring up something that's kind of tied off the news a little bit. Over the weekend, Brent Axe, who is a sports talk radio host in Syracuse, and he's somebody who is, like, you know, I'm definitely familiar with his work.
Also there. A sports writer there.
Yeah, and he has worked for Syracuse.com or under that umbrella. He was fired by the radio station for, quote, negative Syracuse sports talk. Our buddy Dan Wetzel pointed out that Syracuse, both in football and certainly in basketball, has been down. And really, you know, his point, and I don't think he's wrong, is that Syracuse is in the wrong conference right now with the ACC. It's, you know, the Big East, as we alluded to before, you know, just isn't an entity in terms of what it was back in the day when they were pretty, they had a football brand with Miami and Virginia Tech, and certainly Syracuse under, you know, different leadership. It was very different. Obviously, with Paul Pasqualoni had it rolling, and Boeheim, you know, at the last 5-10 years, Boeheim has kind of really embarrassed his legacy, right? And now Boeheim has ownership or part ownership of this station. So with that as a backdrop, look at the landscape of this, and do you think there are some brands whose fans and ultimately maybe the schools themselves will end up with mixed feelings of greener pastures?
You mean because I went to Nebraska? Is that your team? Yeah, we're here.
Nebraska necessarily. You took it there.
I mean. That whole story is baffling.
The fact that Jim Boeheim is an investor in the radio station is just unbelievable. You know,
I mean, you can't not connect the dots of, like, well, we want to have Jim Boeheim on more over the next year, so Jim Boeheim wants this guy gone, like that.
Because I have found that in general, like, name a successful sports talk radio show that does nothing but pump up the local team. I mean, when the team's struggling, that's where the callers call in to vent. But that's a whole other story. I think you make a good point, Bruce, about, you know, buyer's remorse. I do think, I mean, look, the Big East crumbled, so I don't know what else they could have done, but they are a weird fit in the ACC, to say the least. The other one that comes to mind for me is West Virginia. That was a really good football program in the Big East, and they've just never really gotten off the ground in the Big 12, and they're kind of a geographical outlier. Now they're going to get some more.
I disagree with that. I don't feel like they've had really good teams there. I don't think that's
I remember one really good team with Will Grier.
No, but they've had good teams. I don't feel like it's like they've never got off the ground. I don't feel
they
like
had, they had some steady success under Dana Holgorsen. They did leading up to that big year where they almost played for the conference title. Yeah, I mean, I think if we look back on, like, the last decade, like, beyond, like, Texas A&M, like, who are the actual big winners? It's not that long of a list in terms of, like, just being a record. Lot. I mean, of Power Fives moving around, I suppose. Like, certainly TCU and Utah and, like, the ones who have been able to make the move up have, like, certainly proved they belong to play at the highest level. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of – if it's more, like, I suppose, like, lateral moves, like, certainly I can speak for Nebraska, like – yeah, there's a lot of, like, safety in being in the Big Ten and making a lot more money competitively. Like,
was it good for Colorado?
Nope. I think it's hard to say that it has been. By the way, I'm not wrong here. West Virginia, when they were in the Big East, had four top 10 teams. Since they've been in the Big 12, two teams that finish ranked one 18th and one 20th. So I'll tell you who I think might have buyer's remorse 5 years from now, Oklahoma. They are so used to winning 12 games and winning the conference and going to the playoff. Obviously that didn't happen last year, but more often than not, since Bob Stoops got there, right, they've been a playoff / BCS contender. Now you're joining a conference where there's like eight Oklahomas, you know, like eight programs that recruit at a high level and can compete for national championships if they have the right coach. And how are the fans going to feel if like you're having a lot more 7-5s than you used to?
That was when that news first leaked. That was the thing I couldn't wrap my head around is like Texas, I get it. Oklahoma, like, just like, why would you want to give up the throne? You know, but obviously the competitive piece is not that high on the list of priorities these days, but like, yeah, I agree. I don't think Oklahoma screwed in the SEC or anything like that, but I think there's going to be a transition here. And that's not to say that they've recruited poorly or anything like that, but it's going to be a whole different world for them. And I think it's probably going to take a little bit of time. And I could say the same for Texas.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, like an interesting little snapshot into what Stu just said. We'll use Lincoln.
Well, Bruce, like, you've been around UCLA a ton. I mean, how is that going to work for them when they take on those dramatically different schedules next year?
You know, it's weird because in a lot of ways, I feel like they are built like a Big Ten team now, which is different in how they operate. They're a run heavy team. I don't necessarily like to me.
I mean, but how did it go for Frost? Trying to do the same thing, you know?
I think there was a... Honestly, I think this is... To me, it's a bigger jump to go in the SEC. If you look, and I just did this, you look at Lincoln Riley's first year as the head coach there. He played... They played at Ohio State, which is a non-conference game. But out of that, the only teams that were finished in the top 25, there was two other teams, TCU and Oklahoma State, you know, where it's just like, and then everybody else was like a mid-level team. And, you know, the next year was similar. Both those schools were the same. You know, it's just like, I just feel like it's such a deeper pool. Like the next year that his second year, Texas was a top 10 team and West Virginia was the only other ranked team. You know, you're just not going to face that in this new league. So what Stu's saying, I think is a very valid concern, you know, and it's interesting because the leader behind it is the guy most people I think associate. And I would agree with this as good an AD as there is behind the leadership. I've been very impressed by their president and my, you know, personal dealings with them. So the leadership to me at Oklahoma is about as good as you probably get in college sports, but man, it seems to be a pretty big gamble that Oklahoma is putting down.
Now the saving grace is with the 12 team playoff and the six at larges, you know, 9-3 in the SEC, probably going to get
gonna be harder to be 9-3, Stu,
but it's going to be harder to be 9-3, right? In terms of UCLA, I think a lot will depend on, like, we don't know yet. The Big Ten is not, said anything about like what's the scheduling going to look like in this 16 team? Like, are they going to be playing a lot of Ohio State and Michigan, or are they going to be playing a lot of Iowa and Nebraska?
Because I think they're going to play a lot of Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota geographically. I think they're going to get one pod game from the East, which is, you know, Maryland, Rutgers, Ohio State, Penn State.
Yeah, that's more manageable to me. If you're basically saying they're going to be a Big West team, a Big Ten West team, even if they're not going to have those divisions anymore, and that's manageable. I mean, look, UCLA hasn't been all that great in the Pac-12, and now they're going to what most people consider a stronger conference, so scheduling will matter there. Well, Max, this has been great, and I think the next couple weeks you and I are going to be on high alert. Now that I've committed to going to the NCAA tournament on Thursday, we expect that to be the day that the Pac-12 gets a TV deal done. But
I'm going to be out of town next Monday, Tuesday, so it'll absolutely happen.
Oh, my gosh. That's when the Pac-12 presidents are meeting. Yep.
Oh.
I got your back. You have my back this Thursday. I'll have your back next Monday and Tuesday.
So you guys have been on notice. You may see Stu Mandel in between Darren Rovell and Michael Wilbon with maybe he'll be the T or he'll be the W, shirt off, screaming and
yeah, who's your celebrity media crew? I think Adonde is who else do who are you partying
well,
with?
I don't really don't really let me into that club, but you know, look, I went to Salt Lake for the first one.
You're in the more than the Brian Hamilton B list.
And it, I mean, the Salt Lake, like, you know, it was historic. They'd never been to the tournament. Yes. Like, it was a big deal. But it was also a little cringy. Mike Greenberg was leading the pep rally. You know, I remember Rachel Nichols walked into the locker room with her credential and her purple shirt. Like, I was like, even I was like, man, we are obnoxious.
I feel no offense to. But I feel like you're more in like the Caddyshack half hour pool day with like it's you, Brian Hamilton, Adam, like probably
Adam's
not
pretty serious. Adam's pretty intense.
I'm not saying he's not intense. I'm just saying in terms of like the Greenberg, you know, Wilbon crew. I feel like I don't know.
I mean, look, I didn't watch a Northwestern basketball game until like mid February, so I mean, I'm as bandwagon gets. So. But
I'm gonna be honest
with
you guys today on this podcast. I learned that Northwestern's in the tournament, so pretty excited for you guys. Yeah,
yeah. Sorry about Nebraska missing the NIT, by the way. I think that first round,
hey, they got a lot better. They're like 500 this year, which is big improvement.
They're on the right track. And John Hayes, his Penn State Nittany Lions, man, almost won the Big Ten tournament. So, all right, enough basketball for this podcast. Max, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Stu, let's get to the mailbag. As always, send your questions to the audiblepod@gmail.com. Stu, this first question is from Gordon in your old hometown, your former hometown, Atlanta. Dear Stu and Bruce, the Ivies are going D1 and Jeff Bezos wants his alma mater, Princeton, to win the national title in the next 4 years. He's going to hire a new coach and pay him $50 million per year, as well as equip him with the largest NIL budget in the country. If he doesn't want to win a national title by year four, it is a failure. Who should Bezos hire between the following candidates? Okay, first of all, Bob Sarai's really good coach. Let's not throw him entirely under the bus, but I get it. You were talking about FBS head coaches. Kirby versus Saban.
Yeah, well, this gets to exactly the debates we were having last week on the – I mean, I think if it were 10 years ago, right, you would hire Saban. If it were 3 years ago, you would hire Saban. I think if it's today – for the next 4 years, you got to hire Kirby.
No, you don't.
Because he just did it. Like, if he's trying to win a national championship, Kirby just did it. He just built a program into a national championship team. He's recruiting like no other.
No, he isn't recruiting like no other. Saban just had the number one recruiting class in the country. So don't say he's recruiting like no other.
True. All right. So you're hiring Saban, I take it.
I am. I'm still going with Saban. Saban, by the way, grew up closer to Princeton, New Jersey than Kirby did. He has, you know, he's obviously spent more time, I feel like, in the Northeast. So I'm riding with Nick Saban.
Okay. Ryan Day versus Jim Harbaugh.
Whew.
I'm going to say Harbaugh because of, I mean, you're the one who said it last week. Like, you know, I know, although I thought Harbaugh's, you know, born on third baseline was a little over the top, it's hard to say even today how much of Ohio State's success is because of Ryan Day and how much of it is because of the monster that he inherited. Michigan was definitely down when Harbaugh got there, and we kind of ridden the roller coaster. He definitely had, but he's built them back up very close. You know, I wouldn't say they've been right on the brink of a national championship, but they've at least reached the playoff. So I think it would be him.
The other thing that's interesting about this is Ryan Day went to UNH,
you're getting really hung up on the specifics.
I'm not getting hung on it, but I mean, Princeton is still Princeton, and I think so. But Jim Harbaugh did coach at Stanford, which is the best academic school that plays major college football.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that is an advantage for him there. So I would lean towards Jim Harbaugh on that. Brian Kelly versus Dabo. I'm going to say Brian Kelly because Brian Kelly worked at Notre Dame. No offense to Clemson's academics, but is not Notre Dame.
Yeah, hard for me to see Dabo coaching in the Ivy League. I almost wish he had left out any specific school and just said, you know, if you were hiring, if you were starting a D1 program today, and you had all the money in the world, because it's hard not to picture the coach in that particular school.
So, who would you take under that premise?
I think if this hypothetical school, well, it's a good question.
I'm still Brian taking Kelly. Saban. 55 years, and then
no. But Brian Kelly versus Dabo, if you don't know the schools in the Northeast, is a lot tougher.
Brian Kelly to me, I'm sorry, Dabo to me is going. This is a really fascinating year. Does Garrett Riley, the offensive coordinator who did a terrific job at TCU, does he change the trajectory for Dabo and get them kickstarted?
Yeah.
If he does, like, I feel like we know what Brian Kelly is. He's a really, really good coach who's going to have really good teams. I don't know if he'll ever have a great team. Maybe this is the year to determine that, because he has a lot of guys back. This to me, this is like, I love how Gordon kind of tied these two together. Is it personality wise, they're very different, but I feel like 2023 is a, I don't know if I'm using inflection point as the wrong way, but just the Garrett Riley piece with Dabo versus Brian Kelly with a loaded team with both Georgia and Alabama having to replace starting, you know, multiple year starting quarterbacks, new coordinators themselves. I feel like this is LSU's window. If Brian Kelly's going to win a national title at LSU, and almost and pretty much the last three coaches did, this is, I feel like, the best chance he's going to have to do it.
If it's geographically neutral, I got to go with Dabo for one simple reason. Dabo has won two national championships. Brian Kelly has not won a national championship. Jeff Bezos' goal here is to win a national championship. So I'm going with the two-time national championship coach. Lincoln Riley versus Luke Fickell is a I'm not sure how he paired those two, but it's a really interesting contrast.
If it's a wrestling match, I'm going with Luke Fickell. If it's a football game, I'm going with Lincoln Riley. I just feel like I think it'll be easier for Lincoln Riley to recruit to players, to recruit, because he's the most critical position is quarterbacks. Lincoln Riley has had three Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks in a really short span of time. It's also going to help you get receivers and skill guys. To me, this is, I think Luke Fickell's a really good coach. I'm going Lincoln Riley here.
It's tough. I mean, I could see it either way. I think I am going to go Lincoln Riley, but he's got to hire a different defensive coordinator.
Who's he got to hire that's going to convince you that, you know, that it's going to change?
Please, you
can say that, but it's another thing to give me somebody.
It's funny because my first two names that came to mind are guys who are now head coaches, Brent Venables and Dave Aranda. But just to be clear, like, my first thought was, well, you need a defense to win a national championship. Luke Fickell has shown he has a defense. But then, you know,
like, Phil Parker is necessarily the defensive coordinator, but he's also going up, you know, he's practicing against one of the most dud style offenses. And that it's not a coincidence. That's,
you know, this is a whole other conversation, Bruce, but like, I'm looking at the top defenses from last year, and it's not like none of these schools have a guy who's like been there and been doing it for a long time. Like, Georgia changed defense coordinators last year. You know, Michigan has changed defensive coordinators seemingly every year. So I, the days of a Venables or Randa, like, guys who are like, you like, who is considered the best defensive coordinator now?
It's a great question. I mean, Phil Parker has been consistently very, very good. But remember, going into last year, Jim Knowles was considered a terrific defensive coordinator. And Michigan and Jim Harbaugh just obliterated them.
Mike Elko was another one who was very respected, who has now since gotten a head coaching job. Yeah. Good question. I don't know that there's a stand. If he's giving him $50 million, he could just hire away a head coach, right? Like, hey, Dave Aranda, you don't make anywhere near what I can pay you at Princeton to be my defensive coordinator. Let's zip through the rest of these. James Franklin versus Matt Rhule. I know who you're going to say.
I'm going to take James Franklin. I think he's proven he can recruit at a little bit of a higher level, but I like Matt Rhule a lot too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. James Franklin. Hugh Freeze versus Josh Heupel.
Ooh, that's a good one. Josh Heupel had a better year last year. I think what he's done at Tennessee has been extremely impressive. I would lean towards Hugh Freeze, but, you know, a year ago I would have thought there's a bigger gap there, but it's gotten closer. You?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's gotten closer, but like, if Heupel were to come back and have another year like that this year at Tennessee, then he's my answer. But right now, there's just a little bit longer track record of Hugh Freeze, you know, winning in that conference. Not necessarily
that, that by the way, too, is that Josh Heupel, it felt to me, and I don't know if I want to, I don't know what you necessarily agree with me, but it felt to me like Josh Heupel was backsliding at UCF because that third year.
I mean, everybody thought that was a completely underwhelming hire, but it definitely isn't anymore. I'm thinking, you know, that offense that he runs is fantastic. I don't know that he's going to win a national championship that way. But we shall see.
Let's get to this one last question, Stu. Derek Johnson. We mentioned Matt Rhule a second ago. I do want you to jump in this a little bit. Bruce, Matt Rhule has put a lot of effort into recruiting Nebraska legacy prospect Dylan Raiola. Quarterback recruits of Dylan's stature usually do not go to programs with Nebraska's recent record. Is Rhule misusing Nebraska's resources in recruiting Raiola when history suggests he's more likely to pick a recent contender? Stu, why don't you weigh in first, and I'll come on the back end of that.
I think he's right. I mean, I don't think Dylan Raiola is going to end up at Nebraska, but it's absolutely worth those resources for two reasons. One, if Dylan Raiola lives up to the hype, like that's a game changing, addition to your program. And also just and we've talked about this before, more that Jaden Rashada didn't turn into this, but the momentum he would get in recruiting if he got Dylan Raiola to commit, you know, even if he then turns around and decommits like 3 weeks before signing day, would pay off. So no, I do not think it's a misuse of his resources.
Yeah, I agree. And from the people I've talked to in college coaching, they think much highly of the ability of Dylan Raiola than Jaden Rashada, certainly. And I saw him at Elite 11 last year. He was at their workout out here in Southern California. He was really, really impressive. And I agree. Like, if you're Matt Rhule, swing for the fences. You do have a couple of big ties to him. Why would you not take a big swing at him if you and see where it goes? And look, Matt Rhule has a good track record. We know he's going to have a lot of speed there because that's how he's recruited. So you never know.
Yep. For people who don't know, Dylan Raiola, he's in Phoenix. He's the number one prospect in this coming class, not just a quarterback, but in the whole country. And I remember hearing last summer, maybe early fall, people saying, yeah, he's better than anybody in this most recent class, which is saying something because the most recent class had Arch Manning, Dante Moore, Malachi Nelson. Would you agree? Do you think he's like the more of the sure thing?
I hate to use the term sure thing when it comes to quarterback prospects. I just think it's too much of a crapshoot, but he was very impressive. I mean, he's a really big, I don't even want to say big kid. He looks like a big man. He doesn't look, when he was going into his junior year, he looked like he was going into his, not even his junior year of college. He looked like he was built like an NFL quarterback. I'm curious how big he's going to get, but he was just very impressive demeanor wise. Everything just was like, wow. More so than any quarterback I can remember seeing in the last few years who was that age. Again, he wasn't going into his senior year, he was going into his junior year. And he just like was just very impressive, both in how he carried himself and how he looked and how he threw.
If you had to guess as of today, March 13th, where do you think he ends up?
I don't know. Like,
I realize you're not
For me, like, it's going to be interesting to see. I think if you're him, you're monitoring going, do I think I can beat out this kid who goes there? Because I don't think anybody wants to go anywhere and just sit, but like, as you said, he's been on the West Coast. I would think, Lincoln Riley could have a really good pitch for him because you got all these Heisman winners. Also, I know the receiver talent that they have been bringing in, and like they have some studs who are going to be there, tons of speed that are coming in right now onto this, you say what you want about the defense, like the offense is going to be really scary for a while. So, does he go in there and think, you know what? I've seen Malachi Nelson. I think I can beat him out. Because it's going to be an open competition unless Caleb gets hurt this year, and something, you know, a big change is there. I just think that, you know, USC could end up being the team to beat.
The 24/7 crystal ball right now has it at 55.6% for USC, 33.3% for Nebraska, and 11.1% for Georgia, for what it's worth. This was a fun episode. It's always fun when Max comes on, but we talked about some really interesting, not just the Big 12, Pac-12 stuff, but some of the other realignment related aspects as well. As always, you can send your questions to theaudiblepod@gmail.com, and we'll see you next time.